Well, the whole of Wagner's Ring was just the salad at the beginning of the meal. Quite a substantial salad, perhaps, but now the two major documents of the Catholic 19th century, actually documents of all time, because the doctrine is permanently valid. It's an interesting point that a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago, yes, it was before the Archbishop's death, Cardinal Ratzinger said, he was cardinal at that time, he said that documents like these, he mentioned actually Quanta Cura, which is connected with the syllabus, Hascendi and Lamentabili were the three he quoted, but he could have quoted these two, the Sion and the syllabus. He said they were just a substantial anchorage in Catholic doctrine. In other words, these documents, these anti-liberal, anti-modern documents of the popes of the 19th century and the early 20th century, like Pope Pius IX and Pius X, they are just somewhere where the church drops anchor and the ship of Peter stays there for a little while, and then the church pulls up the anchor and goes on to happy modern times and the brave new world and new doctrine like Vatican II, which is so much more happy and cheerful and light. And how much happier we all Catholics now are. We're dancing in tune with the world. Well, the Archbishop's reply was, Cardinal, if these documents are only a substantial anchorage and the church pulls them up and moves on, then everything that you are saying is only a substantial anchorage, and I don't need to believe it either. It's not doctrine for all time. It's not doctrine that cannot be changed. It doesn't belong to the church's body of unchanging doctrine. We had a glimpse last night of the Hegelian mind, in which the law of non-contradiction doesn't exist any longer. Black is black, or it's white. White is white, but white can also be black. So there are no contradictories which exclude one another. There's no truth which excludes untruth, nor untruth which excludes truth. Truth embraces untruth, and untruth embraces truth, and we're all living happily ever after. That's the Hegelian world. If you imagine that in the mind, and then imagine it in the mind of the Catholic leaders, like the Pope, popes, and cardinals, we're in trouble. So this documents like this, the Sion, are doctrine for all time. But Pius X did not mean just to be dropping a substantial anchorage when he made this document. It's true for all time. Let me profit by that good-looking water. The Sion is the French, the original of this document. It dates from 1910. That's just nearly 100 years ago. The original of the document was written in French, and it was addressed to the French bishops in particular for what was at that moment a French problem. But actually, it was much more than a French problem. It's an intensely modern problem. It's democracy. Sion is the French for a furrow, like a farmer ploughs across a field, a furrow. I forget why it's the movement gave itself the name of the furrow, but it was a movement started in the 1890s by a Frenchman called Marc Sangy. And it began as a student movement. And it began amongst students, I think, in Lyon. And Marc Saulnier was a very charismatic personality, and he loved the students, and the students loved him. He would sort of go out in the breaks with his arms around the shoulders of the students, because his love was so all-embracing. And the idea was a rejuvenating of the Catholic Church, a rejuvenating of the Catholic Church's attitude towards modern problems, like the Church's inability to reach through to the workers. A time would come when the students would be led out to fraternize with the workers. And Marc Saulnier was, in effect, teaching the church how to come up to date. He was teaching the church how to get into tune, into harmony with today's world. In other words, he was realigning the church's ideals and the church's doctrine on modern ideals, the ideals of the modern age, like in France, the Republican ideals of liberty, equality, fraternity. 3 years previously, Pius X had put out his great encyclical against modernism called Pascendi. In 1910, he also put out dates the anti-modernist oath. Pius X understood liberalism. Many people today do not understand liberalism. And Catholics have got to understand liberalism. It's a very dangerous animal. It looks very sweet. It looks very nice. It looks very understanding. It's all love, 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 spelled L-U-V, L-U-V, L-U-V in English. It's all just... It's all embracing, it's gooey and sticky, it's just like chocolate. It's all feeling, nice feelings. And Marc Saulnier was full of these nice feelings, and his students, he filled his students with these nice feelings about everything and everybody in today's world. Well, Pius X said no, it won't fly. As they say in American, this dog won't hunt. Meaning it's not Catholic. And in this document, after waiting for some time, this document is 1910, and the movement began in the 1890s, and Pius X pulled the snake out of his hole and held it up for everybody to see. This animal is poisonous, this is extremely dangerous, extremely dangerous. Looks very nice and sweet, and it's extremely dangerous. And he says why. You've got here a schema, or a, if you like, a game plan of the document. Today it can be difficult to find the text of the Sion. Of course, on the internet you will find it. I'm quite sure. I'm not looking. I'm quite sure it's there. Everything is on the internet, and you may even find it in Swedish. I don't know. You'll certainly find it in French and German and English, I'm quite sure. Italian, Swedish, I'm not so sure. As you can see on the plan, there are four main sections of the document. There's an introduction. And then there's the doctrine of this movement, the doctrine of the Sion. Then there is the action of the Sion that follows on that doctrine. That's the third main section. And then you've got Catholic counteraction. In other words, the Catholic answer to this false movement. But the Pope begins by, in his introduction, the introduction of the papal documents is always a presentation of the need, the explanation of the problem, the laying out, at least briefly, of the problem, why there's a problem, and why the Pope must write about this problem in order to deal with it. And there you've got, down the a central column down the middle, from 1 to 49, the paragraph numbers of the numbers of the paragraphs of the Sion, the sections of the Sion. That's probably a numbering that comes from Pius X himself. In some of the documents, the paragraphing differs. I don't think paragraphing will differ. So if you found a copy of the Sion, probably you would have no difficulty in locating these numbers. The Pope must guard Catholics, number one. This is a letter from the Pope. He's writing to the French bishops. These letters are called encyclicals because in Greek, kouklos means a circle. We've still got in English cycle. Cycle or a circle, a wheel. So you've got a bicycle, a monocycle, a tricycle, with three wheels, a bicycle with two wheels, and an encyclical is a letter that's going to go round the cycle or the circle of all the bishops. So this one actually went, this encyclical went around the French bishops. The Pope didn't want to raise a problem where it didn't yet exist. The problem was with the French bishops. It was a French problem at this moment. Many problems begin by being French problems, but the French are thinkers, and what goes on in Catholic France is liable to happen in the rest of the Church after a while. So the Pope hoped that he could stop it in France before it spread everywhere else, but actually the problem is now international. This is, in a way, the problem of Vatican II. It's absolutely relevant to the problem of Vatican II. The Pope must guard Catholics from high-flown liberalism like the seal. In other words, high-flown liberalism. High-flown in English, beautiful words, noble, lovely, handsome words which make you which lift you off this poor little earth and take you into a dreamland where everything is nice and sweet and beautiful and lovely. That's high-flown liberalism. We are going to liberate this land from all unhappiness. We are going to change everything that needs to be changed in this country. We promise you that nothing of the wretchedness of the last several years is going to last under our politicians, under our party. And we are going to make you all free. We are going to liberate you. We are going to give you all equality and brotherhood in the new country as we see it, envisaged in the vision of our great leaders. You probably know the style. Notice how often modern politicians promise change, which says how unhappy people are deep down with things as they are. Otherwise it wouldn't pop page, but close brackets. Then, he goes on to, he talks about the Sionists, in other words, the people, the youngsters mostly belonging to this movement. And he talks about their persons and their errors. And the Pope is going to start by being nice, by saying nice things about these people. In Latin it's called captatio benevolentia. Before you administer a stinging rebuke, before you tell them that they're completely wrong and that they're completely crazy, you begin by telling them they are nice guys and that they do mean well. Liberals often mean well. But the way to hell is paved with good intentions, says the old proverb. Liberals speak nicely, they think nicely, and they're sincere. Like Benedict XVI is sincere, that he's wrong. He's terribly wrong. But he means well. And it's because he means well, it's not clear and certain that he's denying what he thinks is the Catholic faith. So he begins with sections 2 and 3, with 2 to 5 he begins talking about the persons, and then before he talks about their errors. And talking about their persons, he will begin with their virtues. He will say some nice things about them. He doesn't say anything nice about their doctrine. He says nice things about the persons. Same with liberals always. You can say nice things about them as people because they can mean well. They can be sincere. They can be well-intentioned. But they're way wrong. But you can start by saying that they do mean well. So, as persons, the Sionists are noble. Many of them are young students. Enthusiastic. Selfless. Idealistic. Some of the red lights should begin winking by now. Youngsters who are noble, enthusiastic, selfless and idealistic, what do they say? What are they about? What do they believe in? And their promoting of Christ among the workers deserved, in the past tense, deserved encouragement. They were, at least to begin with, trying to take Christ out to the workers, the workers were already a problem. The industrialization of the 19th century, represented interestingly in Wagner's Ring by the Nibelungen. The Nibelungen, that race of dwarfs that lives underneath the earth, and under this, Albrecht is a slave master. Like an industrial machine, a forge. And there they are banging and forging away to make the gold that will accompany the ring. Wagner sensed the problem with industrialism. And industrialism was already alienating the workers. And the workers are in this unnatural factory, like a machine environment. And they're being cut off from the land. They are being cut off from the church because their way of life is becoming too distant from nature and from God and from things of God. They're coming under masters who don't care about their religion. So the young students want to take Christ back out to the workers is admirable. But 4 and 5 in their vices, but in capital letters, they were ill-equipped, and that phi and theta is philosophy and theology. They were ill-equipped in philosophy and theology and history to avoid the liberal errors. In other words, these youngsters did not know their doctrine. They hadn't learnt reality. They'd been taught by Marc Saulnier dreams. They haven't learned things as they really are. They're not being taught how things really are. So the Pope is going to teach how things really are. The popes, the good popes, teach reality. The new popes are teaching, they're into this dream. They're into the modern dream. I was saying yesterday that modern man is at war with God, and he's replacing the reality of God with his own dream. So here is the dream. They were ill-equipped in philosophy and theology and history to avoid liberal errors, and they refused to heed, to pay attention to warnings of danger from the church. Already Pius X had been flashing a red light, and they had refused to heed. The poor old Pope doesn't understand. Pius XII doesn't understand. We, who are going to bring about a council to renew the church, we understand. We, like Martin Luther King, we have a dream. But these old conservative fuddy-duddy popes, they're not with it. They're nice men. They mean well. But you know, they don't understand. Archbishop of Fayette. Oh, what a good man. What a great missionary. He did a lot of good work in Africa, but he just didn't understand the needs of the church today. Out of Africa, you know, Africa's Africa. Here back in Europe, we needed more ideas, progressive and new and creative and forward-looking and positive. Not all of this old, backwards, antiquarian, old-fashioned retardation, retardedness. No. Let's move forward into a brave new world in which we can attract the whole world, in which we can convert the world, in which we can save the world for the church and save the church for the world, instead of standing back and just condemning and condemning and condemning. It's a dream. If modern man is moving further and further away from God, like Wagner, because of deep down wrong principles. So much in Wagner is right, but deep down there's that big error. Society is bound to be against love. Social order and love are necessarily opposed to one another. Society is opposed to the individual, and the individual is opposed to the society. It's a terrible error. Terrible error. God designed society, a man who belongs to society, he designed society, as we shall see. He designed society to have authority. Authority is not automatically bad. Authority comes from God because it's an absolute necessity of society, and God made man to live in society. He did not make man to live alone in the forest like Rousseau pretended, and like Wagner has Siegfried living and growing up in Act 3, in the third opera, as we see in the first act of the third opera. The beginning of that third opera, Siegfried, the young Siegfried, is a wild adolescent, completely natural. That's the dream of the modern age, completely. And he's bringing in a bear. It's very difficult in the opera house. You can't do it without, you can't try to make a bear without making people laugh. Because you're like a donkey, you put two people, you put one in front and the other behind, and they'll come like this. Everybody will laugh, so you can't afford to do it. But Wagner's idea, as you see from the text, is that Siegfried comes in with a bear, and with the bear, he starts tormenting old Mima. Well, it's an idea of a happy and forward-looking youth, but it's not necessarily a very wise idea. These youngsters, they hadn't learned their doctrine, they hadn't understood history, the Catholic history, the history of all the Catholic centuries, the history of the Catholic Church, and so they refused to pay attention to the warnings of the Pope. The old guy just doesn't understand. We understand. We have got something new and positive. So, says the old fuddy-duddy, so, says Pastor, we must speak. And it's not a question of being an old fuddy-duddy, it's a question of truth. What way are human beings built? How did God make human beings? What are ideas that enable human beings to flourish, and what are ideas that will destroy human beings and destroy their society? And the Pope, with the knowledge of 20 Catholic centuries, will teach these are ideas that will create society, and these are ideas that will destroy society. Now the ideas of the Sion, they look very beautiful, but they're poisonous, and they will destroy society. So we must speak. And he begins with the errors in discipline, and then in doctrine. Firstly, they claim that their work does not come under the church's control. That's a classic excuse. They claim their work does not come under the church's control. That's wrong, paragraph 7. Because the Sion is planning and propagating ideas to regenerate all society. In other words, they have got a plan for the recreation of the modern world, of the world. They are going to save society with their new ideas, like Bach. They've got a new idea, an idea of a new world order, and they are going to destroy the old world order in order to replace it with their new world order. They will set up a revolution in order to establish their ideas. They plan and propagate ideas to regenerate all society. And Pope Pius X says, if anybody has a plan to change and rescue society, they're coming up against that's the Catholic Church's domain. It depends upon the Catholic Church, who is the continuation of our Lord Jesus Christ. It depends upon the Catholic Church to save mankind and to save society. There is the true redemption. There are many false redemptions. We were seeing yesterday the Wagnerian redemption, which is sympathetic. Redemption through the love of woman, the love and sacrifice of woman. But it won't fly. It will fly for a while, but not for very long, and it's not a real redemption. It won't fly for very long, because what happened is that after a while, the women said, you're throwing all the weight on us, you men are misbehaving, you're living without God, and you throw all the weight upon us to rescue the situation and to hold up the weight and to behave like men and the leaders? No, no, no. If you throw off God, we're going to throw off you. So the women held up society for a while through the 19th century, but then came the 20th century and the women said, that's enough. And they went off and became suffragettes, they went off and became feminists, and when the men fool around, the roof begins to leak. But when the women fool around, the foundations shake. You may know that on the miraculous medal, the cross is situated on top of M for Mary. And that's the symbolism of the fact that the woman is the foundation. The man is the summit. He's the leader. And he should lead upwards to heaven. But the woman is the foundation. The woman is, so when the woman begins to shake, the foundation is shaken. When man shakes, you've got the tower shaking. But when woman shakes, the foundation shakes. It's worse. So, and the women's, the tower was rocking and said, we can rock, we can go on rocking and fooling around and disobeying God because you're always there to hold things together. Redemption by woman. The woman said, that's not fair. And so after a while, she said, no more. And we have the modern world, and the woman is shaking, and everything is shaking, and everything is coming down. They claim their work does not come under the church control. That's false, because they're trying to say, they want to save the world. They've got an idea to save the world. The church is the salvation of the world, because the church, the Catholic Church, is the continuation of our Lord Jesus Christ, not the Protestants. Because they've broken the idea that the individual is on his own, that the individual doesn't make part of society, is a Protestant idea. It's the individual conscience without going through the church. The individual and God. God and the individual. God and the individual directly with God. That's where the idea of Rousseau and the Wagner comes from originally. It's Protestantism. So the Protestants haven't got it. They are the problem, not the solution. The only solution is what the Catholic Church has. It's this tough solution. We have to go to confession and confess our sins. But it's the solution. It is the solution. This indiscipline is bad enough, but worse still, says the Pope, they're in doctrinal error. Doctrine is more important than discipline. That's a huge point. Because in the modern world, doctrine is not important. Doctrine is considered, doesn't matter what you think, just so long as you're a nice guy. Just so long as you mow your lawn and pay your taxes and play quite a good game of golf, that's okay. Doesn't matter whether you're a Mohammedan or a Hindu or a Protestant or a Catholic. Don't worry about all those ideas. Ideas are unimportant. What's important is we all should get together. Think about what unites us and not about what separates us. Heard that one before? Just let's all get slushy and mushy and embrace one another and everything will be, as the Americans say, hunky-dory and peachy-keen. So the Pope is going to go on to the doctrinal error. They place sovereignty in the people. Sovereignty is supreme rule. So it's the people that rule. The ideas of the Sion were basically democratic. It's the people that matter and not God. And if the people clash with God, or if God clashes with the people, then it's God who must give way. It's the modern apostasy. It's putting man in the place of God. And modern democracy is a classic way, a means of putting man in the place of God. The American Constitution begins with we the people. It doesn't say we the people are kicking out God, but it's implicit. And it's implicit, for instance, in the fact that the American Constitution, to take the example of the United States, I always say that all of the deep down problems of the United States come from England. That's my country. So it's not a question of blaming the United States, of trashing the United States. It's a question of picking out the ideas. And the ideas are these heresies which took over England long before they landed in the United States. I know an American, Charles Coulomb, historian, who says, I asked him once, who was the most important person in United States history? And he said, Henry VIII, who of course was born and died long before the United States was founded, about something like, when did he die? 1540s, 1740s, more than 250 years, a little less than 250 years before the United States was founded. But he's right, Charles Coulomb is right. That is to say, when Henry took England out of the Catholic Church, and made his own church, with the result that England then fell into heresy. He created all the deep down problems of the United States, which are problems of Protestant heresy, of Anglican and Protestant heresy, but not only Anglican. So doctrine is all important. That's why the whole of the second section will be doctrine, see on doctrine, and only the third section will be see on action. Regularly, practically always, in the great papal encyclicals, they analyze the doctrine. They go for the jugular, like a dog goes for the jugular, like an animal attacking goes for the jugular vein. The popes go for the doctrine. That's exactly the opposite of the modern world. The modern world always says, doctrine doesn't matter, it's another what you think. Ideas don't matter. And the conclusion of ideas don't matter is Benedict XVI, is these liberal popes, the modern popes, who don't worry about doctrine. It doesn't matter. Their minds are not working. Many, many people today, the minds are not working. I'm sure many of you have the experience that you begin arguing with somebody. You start with something obvious, like, well, let's say 2 and 2 are 4, and then you try to go build on 2 and 2 are 4 until you come to the conclusion, whatever it may be. And when you arrive at the conclusion and you've connected it back to something clear and obvious like 2 and 2 are 4, he says, well, of course, all of that is just your opinion, he says. What? 2 and 2 are 4 is my opinion? Or day is different from night is my opinion? It's reality. That's your opinion of reality. Once you reach that stage, the mind is gone. They want the mind to go. They want their minds to go. They don't want reality. And that's a mass of people today. They don't want reality. They want to escape from reality. They want the dream. The dream is so much more nice than reality. So, they place sovereignty in the people. They wish to abolish the social classes, democracy. In the American Constitution, it says that there will be no classes. There's going to be no aristocracy. The people is all going to be level. And the Sion wants to abolish classes. It wants to abolish the upper class and the lower class. We're all going to be equal. Liberty, equality, fraternity. And they dream of rebuilding society on a new basis, defying the laws of human nature. It's a dream of changing the very foundations of society and reconstructing all of society on the new foundations, the foundations of the modern world, which are the Republican foundations of liberty, equality, fraternity. And the Pope says, this is defying the laws of human nature. The Pope says, like I said yesterday, that there is such a thing as human nature. It is a reality. It's a reality that doesn't change. It's a reality with certain laws, which always apply, which are always true. And you can't change those laws. You can't change the difference between man and woman because it comes from God and it's implanted in the nature of every man and in the nature of every woman. Both are human beings. Before God and before the judgment seat of God, they're completely equal. But in this life, they're not equal in anything. In everything concerning motherhood, the woman is superior. And that's a huge law. That's the whole future of the human race. Everything depends upon motherhood. But in the rest, man is superior. Now, you don't need reason to deal with the child or in order to be a mother. Therefore, the women are not strong in reason. Man is stronger in reason. Thing. But she is stronger in intuition and in feeling. She says to her husband, darling, this is what's going on in our boy. 2 months later, he says, honey, how did you know that 2 months ago? I've just worked it out. I've just arrived at it by reasoning and thinking. She saw it 2 months ago because she by her intuition. And the two gifts are completely complementary. She is superior in intuition and feeling because that's what you need in order to for family. That's what you need for husband, for children, for everybody else in the home. You need to be more gifted for sensing people, which women are, because that's how they will raise their children. That's how they will understand their children. But man is the tower. Man is for thinking and for reasoning and for taking everybody to God. St. Paul says, as Christ is the head of the man, as Christ is the head of the man, so the man is the head of the woman. The man is the head of the woman. Again, that's not modern doctrine. The CEO would hate that idea. The man being the head of the woman. The woman being the heart of the family. Man being the head of the family. A difference and an inequality. Any inequality today is a horror. For the Catholic Church is not at all a horror. God has designed everything unequal. Practically everything. The flowers, the animals, the plants, the mountains, the nations, the peoples, the races, the sexes, the individuals, everything in God's creation is unequal. What God plans is a great variety and an order in the variety, with some things higher and some things lower. And St. Paul says in the Epistle of the Romans, don't argue, don't ask or start thinking, don't start questioning God on why he put this lower and put that higher. It's like a building. That stone is lower than that stone is higher. Those stones are the highest. Why does the builder put this stone down here and that stone up there? Because he needs both. To build a church, some stones have got to be the very highest of all at the end. Some stones have got to be right down on the ground. He needs both. The building as a whole needs both. The human race as a whole needs different sexes, different nations, different peoples, different races. Every race is in its right place, or should be in its right place. And when the races and the peoples and the nations do what God meant them to do, the result will be a great happy symphony. Africa was happy, much happier, when the whites were in Africa doing what they should do, teaching, organizing, instructing, and best of all, bringing the faith to help the Africans to save their souls, to make it possible for Africans to save their souls. And the Africans were doing what they do, what they can do. And they're happy when they do what they know how to do, what they're good at doing. And what they're good at doing is different from what the whites are good at doing. Something very good that the blacks are often better at doing than the whites is mothering. Which is why so often white families used to take a black nanny to look after the children. Because black women have a big heart and a big motherly heart. And they're very good at looking after children. Whereas the white mothers are sometimes cold and distant. Not always, of course. But the black mothers are nearly always, with all their faults, that's just me taking an example of something in which, of something really human, in which the blacks are superior. Okay, you compare blacks with whites, broadly speaking, the blacks will be superior in some things and the whites will be superior in others. But some of them, generally speaking, the blacks are designed to do... The blacks are sort of... They're lower down on the wall and the whites are meant to be higher up on the wall. That's just the way it is. That's the reality. When the whites stopped doing what they should be doing, which is leading the blacks are in all kinds of trouble. And they have independent movements, and Africa is now a horrible mess, especially, for instance, Rhodesia or Zimbabwe. And the President Mugabe, is a horrible black tyrant. Such as it was very difficult to find a white tyrant like that. Well, they have existed. But let's just say he's a typical African tyrant. I think that's true to say. He is a tyrant. A horrible man. Oof. Horrible. Of course, I'm not saying that whites are never horrible, horrible tyrants, but they can be. But it's not. And the key is the faith. If the whites are meant by God to carry the faith to the whole world, that's what we are gifted for, and that's what we should be doing. And when we do that, the other races are relatively happy. They may, you know, throw a number of the whites into a stewing pot if they're cannibals and eat them. Well, you know, that's the blood of martyrs, which is the seed of the church. So the church will advance when a few missionaries are turned into the morning meal for the, but it's the advance of the church. When the whites began, when the French missionaries began in central tropical Africa, many of them died of disease. They're brave young men, young priests, freshly ordained. And they went out to Africa, and there were so many diseases at that time, and such lack of modern medicine. They died like flies. But that was what founded the church in Africa, and then the church took off. From that point, the church began building in black tropical Africa, thanks to the deaths, undoubtedly, of many of those early young missionaries. They died after 1 or 2 years in Africa of the diseases, especially malaria, I believe. The CEOC wishes to abolish the social classes, and they dream of rebuilding society on a new basis, defying the laws of human nature. No, famous paragraph 11, the only basis upon which society can be built is the basis taught by the Catholic Church. In other words, the Catholic Church is the true Church of God. It's God who can design and construct human nature. It's God who designed and bought with his death upon the cross the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church fits human nature. Human nature fits the Catholic Church. Protestantism does not fit human nature, as is shown, for instance, by Wagner and by all kinds of modern errors flowing from Martin Luther. Pestis eram vivus, functus tuum mors ero part. Pope, while I was living, I was a plague, but once I am dead, I will be your death, was Luther's prediction. And it's pretty true. The errors of Protestantism unfolding in the modern world are now at the point of destroying the Catholic Church. Of course, he won't. Martin Luther won't succeed. It's God's church, and God will look after it. God is looking after his church, and God will save his church. But at the moment, his church is in terrible trouble. We move on to Sion doctrine. Father, see if you can find, is my case there? No, it's at back. Okay, don't worry. Sion doctrine, firstly expounded, that means it laid out, explained, presented, and then refuted, meaning contradicted and proved to be false. Firstly, it's expounded, and you've got in paragraph 13 the negative principle, and then the positive principles that follow, like in Pashim. The negative in front of the positive, because you need a bulldozer to clear the building site, to destroy everything that was there before, to lay it all flat and level before you can put up the next building. So the negative principles in this sense precede the positive principles. The devastating negative principle is that man's dignity requires his autonomy or independence, and his autonomy requires his liberation. In other words, if a man is not independent and autonomous in Greek, giving his law to himself, not receiving a law from outside, from anybody above, like God, but making his own law, deciding his own law, independence and autonomy. If man does not have autonomy and independence, then he does not have dignity. That's the idea. It's a diabolical idea, that dignity goes with independence. St. Pius X will say, in the following paragraph, what about all of those humble saints down all the history of the church? Few saints were kings at the top. Many, many saints were poor, humble people, crushed under cruel masters, and who became saints by accepting their sufferings, offering their sufferings to God, and living very humble, unknown, patient lives. Are you going to say that those people who became saints are lacking in dignity because they weren't independent, because they were enslaved, because they were crushed by the tyranny of some system? No dignity amongst saints? Ridiculous. But this is the modern idea of dignity. It's the revolutionary idea of dignity. Unless I am my own lord, like Siegfried, a law unto himself, growing up wild in the forest, I have not got dignity, nor will I have happiness. So dignity requires independence, and independence requires, of course, liberation. So we're right into the revolutionary ideal of liberty. Liberty, equality, fraternity. Following on the need to liberate man, we've had recently, of course, after Vatican II, liberation theology. That's a crazy movement, quite a Marxist or communist movement of thinking, supposedly starting in Latin America. Actually, probably starting somewhere else, but in any case, it was a movement that it's not much talked of any longer, but it's still around. Liberation. And then follow, 14 to 18, the consequences. Therefore, as many people as possible must take part in the direction of affairs. In other words, if I'm a director, I'm independent and I'm free. If I'm underneath, if I'm the number two or the number three or the number four, I'm underneath somebody, I'm no longer independent and I'm no longer free. Therefore, my liberation requires that everybody be a number one. All chiefs and no engines. Somebody who picks up the garbage, who picks up the rubbish, is going to have to be called a chief refuse collection superintendent officer. A chief refuse collection superintendent officer. You get a porter at the airport and he's going to have to be called a sky cap, as though he's a captain. Everybody's got to be a captain. You have the president of a company, and then you have the managing director. He's only number two, but he's got a name as though he's number one. The managing director. And then you have the co-managing director. He's number three, but he's still got a great name like co-managing director. Actually, co is already humiliation. So they're going to find another name like the chief officer of the company. The executive, vice says secondary. Oh no, vice is not acceptable. You have the president, and then you have the chairman, and then you have the chief officer, and to listen to all the names, you won't know which is the number one, because everyone's got to have a name that makes him think he's the number one. In the meantime, if the company is going to survive, somebody has got to be number one. Well, whatever the names are, somebody's got to give orders. Otherwise, the company's not going to survive. If some one person doesn't give orders, you're going to have two people giving orders, you're going to have the thing divided. Right now, you've got BP, British Petroleum, and the Russians arguing over a company inside Russia, a big petrol company. British Petroleum bought a 50-50 share. Apparently, Vladimir Putin said that at that time, which is about 2 or 3 years ago, he said, you're going to have trouble. Who's the boss? When it's 50-50, who's the boss? You're going to have trouble. Sure enough, now they've got trouble. And now they're arguing, and the Russians want to kick out the Brits, and the Brits want to dominate the Russians. For a company to work, somebody has got to be the number one. Whether he's got the name or not, if that's the reality. So either all of this naming of sky caps and chief refuse collection superintendent, either it's just words, or it's chaos. The reality, that's the laws of human nature, that any society needs a number one. But in the Sion, there's not going to be any number one. Interestingly, Marxonia, like many liberals, Marxonia pretended that in his organization everybody was the number one. But in reality, he was a tyrant inside the Sion. And if you didn't do it his way, then it was the highway. As Americans say, my way or the highway, meaning get out. So with Marxonia, in reality, it was my way or the highway. But it was all sweet words, everybody was equal, and everybody was nice, and everybody was number one, and the students were the equal of him, and he was just the equal of the students. The reality was quite different. And some liberals can be real tyrants. It's all sweet and soft and nice to listen to, and the words are sweet, but the reality is a tyranny. Underneath, they govern, because that's the laws of human nature. Somebody has to govern. As many people as possible must take part in the direction of affairs in the Vatican II Church. The laity are going to control the priest, because the laity have got to take part in the priest, the parish affairs, otherwise they've got no dignity. The priests have got to help the bishop to rule the diocese, otherwise the priests have the bishop is run by his council of priests. And then the bishops have to run the pope. The pope pretends that he's just the equal of all of the bishops. This was John Paul II. It's continuing to be Pope Benedict XVI. He's pretending that he's just, well, he's a little bit more since he's Bishop of Rome, but not really very much more, and all of the others are equal. And that's why these liberal popes cannot govern the church. It's chaos. The new church, the Vatican II Church, is chaos because the popes can, and the bishops cannot govern, and they cannot govern because they've got this doctrine of equality. They've got a doctrine which is against, which pretends that there's going to be no number one. Well, there's got to be a number one. Homos. Aukagathon, polikoi, ranii, pais korion zester. Many people being chiefs is not a good idea. Let the chief be one, said Homer 3,000 years ago. It's obvious. It's common sense. Somebody's got to be number one. And you pray to God that he's a good number one. When he's a good number one, everyone else is happy. It looks to me as though Vladimir Putin is a good number one. Russia has benefited immensely under, as I don't know the whole story, I've got to pretend I know it, but that's what it looks like. Because he is a number one. And what that means is that in politics, in economics, in civics, and in morals, each citizen has got to be a king, because authority belongs to the people. But if authority doesn't belong from the people, authority comes from above, otherwise it's not authority. If authority comes from below, then authority is me. I can't be higher than myself because I'm at my own level. I'm bound to be at the level I am at. I can't be my own authority because my authority is bound to be higher than me. Therefore, I cannot be my own authority. The people cannot be its own authority because authority is by definition above whoever is subject to the authority. So when the people are their own authority, again, it's words, it's not the reality. It's just words. Equality doesn't work. It doesn't happen and it doesn't work. What's happened, we'll break off in a moment. What's happened is, and this is quite profound, that in the Middle Ages, all of these problems were solved by the Catholic Church and by our Lord Jesus Christ and his one church. Then, modern man began to fall away from the Catholic Church. But as modern man fell away from the Catholic Church, since Jesus Christ had been the solution to all of these problems, then when the modern world fell away from Jesus Christ, it left a big gap, a huge gap. And a lot of problems that had solutions with the Catholic Church became problems once more. And so something has to fill the gap. You saw with Wagner. Redemption by woman has to replace redemption by Jesus Christ. And the redemption theme is the redemption of seed free or the mother with seed free and so on. It doesn't work. Woman will take the weight for a while, but after that she'll collapse under the weight. She says, it's not for me to carry this weight. This is not what I'm meant to be doing. And if you throw off God, I'm going to throw off you. So, there was a big gap left. But the Catholic Church had taught to people the tremendous value of the individual. Because of the individual's soul, going to heaven and enjoying bliss for eternity. The tremendous value and importance of the individual soul. Now, if I fall away from God, I no longer believe in heaven. But I still believe in my own immense value. I still believe in my own immense dignity. The church had taught human beings their dignity. The dignity is children of God created individually by God in order to go to the heaven of God. Coming from God meant to go to God. The church had taught that. Well, once mankind falls away from Christ, it rejects that God is above, but it keeps hold of my dignity, my equality, my nobility, my liberty. It keeps all of these things, which were fruits of the Catholic Church, but it's now rejecting the roots. And so that without the roots, the fruits perish. And so, as we see today, man is losing his liberty, we're all going into police states. Man is losing his equality, become under tyrants like Mugabe. Man is losing his fraternity. It's any moment now going to be civil war in the streets, with men fighting one another just to eat, killing one another just to eat. There's going to be no more liberty, equality, fraternity soon, because liberty, equality, fraternity are no longer have their Christian foundation. But if you take equality, when in Christian society, and in any sane society, the upper class knows that it's meant to be being the upper class, the lower class knows that it's meant to be being the lower class, I don't think so much more of myself because I belong to the upper class. I don't think so much less of him because he belongs to the lower class. Even the bricks up at the top don't think badly of the bricks below. If the bricks weren't below, the bricks wouldn't be up there because they'd have no support. I'm up there in my place. You're down here in your place. I need you, and you need me. If I'm not up there, then there's going to be rain, and you stones down here are going to be rotten and broken. If you're not down here, I can't be up there because I need you as support. Every brick is in its place, and the whole building stands. If the upper classes do what they're meant to do, and the lower classes do what they're meant to do, between the workers, the laborers, the farm laborers, and the aristocrats yesteryear, there was a perfect understanding. The laborers didn't want to be aristocrats, and the aristocrats didn't want to be laborers. The aristocrats didn't want to go out and fraternize with the peasants. It was natural, the peasants and the aristocrats. Today, all of that's gone. So the Christian equality is gone. They've got to, the Christian equality, which is basically an equality for eternity. You know, even if we are unequal in this life, still we're going to be equal for eternity. For eternity. In marriage. I'm the man and I'm the boss. I'm the head. And you are underneath the head, my darling. Yes, of course I am. That's not a problem. Because when we both die, we're going to come in front of the judgment seat of Jesus Christ, and we're going to be absolutely equal. And we're equal for eternity. That's not a problem. I believe that for this little life. But when I no longer believe that it's a little life with its inequality, planned by God, and with a huge equality for eternity, Christianity has taught me equality. That equality used to belong to eternity. It didn't belong in this little life. But now that I no longer believe in eternity, I've got to take that equality from eternity and cram it, push it into this little life. And so a woman has now got to be the absolute equal of man in everything. We've got police women, pilot women, lawyer women, politician women, bishop women, yes. Why not? We're just as good as the men are. And it's the men's fault. Because the men have no longer got the idea of God, the men are no longer full of God, and therefore the women are not finding in the men what they need, and so the women are saying to places with you, if you're not under Christ, I'm not going to be under you. I'm as good as you in everything. Also, of course, the men are not wanting children. Motherhood is what women are for. If women don't have children, they are frustrated of their main purpose. Of course they're going to force their way into the office. They need their men. They're going to go into the office and do the manly things and pretend that they're as good at doing them as the men are and force themselves upon them in the office because the men won't give the women the home that they need with children. Neither the men nor the women want children. Children require one to be selfless, and I don't want to be selfless. I'm selfish. And so we're all agreed that we're going to have a nice little house by the lake or a very nice little apartment with just one bedroom and it's going to be a love nest and we're going to live there together without any children. And if we want to change partners after 2 or 3 years or 2 or 3 months, that's fine. We're going to change partners. It's just a completely different way of life. And it's based on selfishness, and it's based upon false ideas, and with that way of life, of course, goes equality. The man and the woman, neither of them want children, so she's got no purpose to stay at home. She will take a job just like he does. They will mix as though they're just the same at work. They will do the same work. Ah, it's gone. Gone, gone, gone. So the equality which is meant for all of eternity has to be crammed into this little life where it won't fit. And it makes society explode. You cram these Christian ideals, these Christian truths, without eternity, without God, without eternity, without the faith, you try to cram them into this little life bursts. You didn't get this kind of doctrine before Christianity. This is the doctrine of apostasy. This is the doctrine of people who've learned from Christianity freedom, equality, brotherhood. But they were Christian equality, Christian freedom, Christian brotherhood. Now you've got liberty, equality, fraternity without Christ. And they destroy society, they tear society to pieces. The equality between the man and woman tears the family to pieces. Somebody has to be the head in the family. And the man has the gifts to be the head, she has the gifts to be the heart of the family. And the family without the woman is a family without the heart. And the modern world tears the woman out of the home and forces her to go to work if she doesn't already want to go to work, and the home becomes heartless. And the children grow cold. There's no, as the Germans call it, Nestwärme, warmth of the nest. Because the woman has been torn out, because she's the one that gives warmth and love and tenderness in the home. The man can't give warmth and love and tenderness. The man is going to give a clout, bang, when the kids misbehave. The man is going to give discipline and toughness, leadership. The woman is going to give leadership. The woman is the refuge of sinners. The man is the punishment of sinners. Let's finish this. Let's have a look at the rest of this, just this section, then we'll break. Politically, each citizen is to be king, because authority now belongs to the people. That's nonsense. It's just words. It's not the reality, it's just words. Economically, each worker is to be a manager by means of non-socialist guilds. Well, guilds are a good idea, but every worker being a manager is again just words. It's ridiculous. You can't do it. Somebody is going to have to tell the workers what to do, and good workers, all that good workers want is to be told what to do by somebody who knows what he's talking about. In other words, a good boss. Civically, in other words, in the city, each citizen is to promote the good of the city, of the nation, of mankind. In our new way of things, each citizen is going to be so good. He's going to so wish for the good of mankind, Zeit und Schlung und Million und Dies und Kuss der ganzen Welt. Each citizen is going to be so good and sweet and nice that we are all going to want the good of everybody else. We're all going to want the good. It's just a dream. It's just a dream. They're completely ignorant of original sin. Completely ignorant. The superior moral consciousness of the people is the basis of all democratic plans. In other words, we're going to make the people better with our dream, and then they're all going to be nice. It's just a dream. Pure dream. And that's what the Pope says, 19. This supposed education of the people in democracy is a dream. It's not reality. Because of original sin. Because people are naughty. And people need to be controlled, and they need to be disciplined by, and they need authority. They need a wise authority. They don't need a tyrannical authority, but they do need authority. It's in the nature of things. Let's break off there, and we will certainly break off for, say, 10, 15 minutes, I don't know, and we will pick up again at, let's say, it's now 8 minutes. Let's pick up again at 7:30.
There's some refreshments in the back room for a small fee, which you're most welcome to.
Half past seven.